This is Kabbalah 99. I'm Deborah Sophia. Today we have on our call Rabbi Mendel Brockman, a postgraduate rabbinical student studying in the Central Chabad Yeshiva in Brooklyn, New York. Rabbi Mendel is the son of Rabbi Benji Brockman, who is a rabbi for Chabad of Northwest Metro Denver. In his personal life, Rabbi Mendel has a passion for learning Chassidus, which focuses on Kabbalah. So welcome, Rabbi Brockman.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, my goal with this interview today is to give our listeners a taste of how Kabbalah offers insight into our everyday lives. So I'd like to ask you the question, what draws you to study Chassidism, which talks about Kabbalah, and what practical applications do you see?
What draws me to study Chassidus or Chassidism is, I would say, I see the depth of where Chassidus leads those who teach, those who learn it. And it's just the ideas themselves are so powerful and so profound. It just draws me to it. And I really do enjoy studying that type of material. As a yeshiva student, one of the main focuses is learning Chassidus, which is deeply, deeply rooted in Kabbalah. But in my personal life, I have a passion for learning Chassidus in particular. I don't study Kabbalah, I study Chassidism, which talks about Kabbalah. Kabbalah is not practical because Kabbalah doesn't have any relevance to something that's physical, which is what makes it Kabbalah. It's a secret. It's the mystical part of everything, which on its own doesn't interact with real everyday life. You have to be a Kabbalist. You have to be a spiritual person, someone who lets go of the physical reality to really get a sense of what Kabbalah brings to the table in a practical way. So it's almost like you have to be not practical to make it practical. I think this is why talking to somebody who learns Chassidus is probably the best way to approach what you're trying to get here, because you want a practical side of Kabbalah. Meaning you're already drawn to Chassidus because you want to see, I'm talking about you personally, like this is based on us talking.
Yeah.
You see how important it is to make the spiritual real in our everyday to day lives. And that's kind of hard without interpreting a practical implication from something which inherently, at least based on the authors of Kabbalah, didn't see that coming. So Chassidus is like a revolution that the original authors of Kabbalah would be like, I mean, I didn't write that, but it's true. They would never see that this is where Kabbalah would lead you to, which is why Chassidus was such a revolution when it first came out, because like people were like shocked, like this is not classic stuff. This is like so contemporary and like boom, like out of nowhere it comes out.
What practical applications do you see for Kabbalah in our lives?
Do you want me to say right now how Kabbalah is not inherently practical?
Do you think that's true?
I think that's true.
What was the point of Kabbalah in the beginning?
It was just a study, like just a method of teaching, a certain understanding of things, not really so much to change just a particular way of life or invest itself in everyday people. It was an elite study for people who were beyond the mundane everyday life.
Right. You had to be 40 years old, male, have to know Torah very well. Is that right?
Well, that actually came out only later. Once the Baal Shem Tov came about, he made those guidelines. But the reason why it's called Kabbalah in the first place is because it was passed down from teacher to student in a way where only those worthy who were initially inclined to be spiritual and not be full of sin and be like almost like very, very close to perfect human beings, those were the type of people that could delve into such secrets because they were holding there. They could feel the spirituality, the immense energy within the teachings. So for them, it was real. When you talk about things that are beyond the world, you have to be holding there to see what's really going on. And for us in our everyday lives, initially coming from that perspective, we can't relate to that. We can't see spiritual worlds and we can't fathom what these type of worlds really are. We're almost like swimming in an ocean that's way too big for us. And that's where Chassidus really grabs Kabbalah by its horns and pushes it into a box, which Kabbalah by naturally doesn't really go there, but that's what's so cool about Chassidus. Something which you never expect to become practical is all of a sudden changing the way that we in our everyday lives can actually live.
Yeah, let me ask you a question about that, because it brings to mind that what we're talking about is Kabbalah is on the level of the tzaddik, and then through Hasidism, we've brought it through to Tikkun Olam. So we use the insights of the knowledge of Kabbalah to show us how to live a good life, how to repair the world. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I would say that it's very well said. The tzaddik is the Kabbalist. He's living with the spirituality because he is, by definition, spiritual. Baal Teshuvah, someone who lives in the real world, uses Kabbalah as a tool to try to elevate himself because he's not there yet. He has to refine the klipot and the darkness around him. So yeah,
klipot, you used a word that many people won't know. What is klipot?
Klipot is literally translates as a shell, but it means things that hide the godliness and spirituality.
Tikkun Olam.
Yeah, and so that's like we're saying, the tzaddik, someone who's above and beyond the world, he can access this study. And through Hasidism, we can use the immense energy of Kabbalah and channel it into the physical, into the mundane. And by doing so, we make the world a place where depth and spirituality and meaning can be preserved and flourish, because we've repaired the world and made it almost like another realm in the spiritual instead of just being physical.
Oh, so we bring heaven to earth.
Yeah, and okay. We make the world, a place where spirituality is not secondary in nature.
I suspect, though, we first have to change ourselves.
Well, of course we do. And in a certain sense, that is the process. Mm. Us as humans, the Kabbalah tells us that we are a microcosm of the world in the world itself. So the way when we affect a certain part of ourselves, we're actually creating a spiritual chain reaction to the world in general, which makes the whole world a better place. So we are that small little world, but when we change that, the world becomes better and better, one person at a time.
It makes me think of a lever. A little bit of pressure makes big changes.
Yeah, that's really coming because God Almighty has given humans a gift of being, because of the godly spark inside of them, God gave us the ability to access that spark. Even though we seem so small compared to everything around us, but when we turn and look inside of ourselves, we can unleash the energy within that spark. And by doing so and changing ourselves, we can change the world around us.
That's very hopeful. The last time we spoke, we talked about primordial world, a world before creation called Tohu, and how it's different from the world we see now, which is Tikkun. I know that this is a many-year study for you and a lifetime study, but for now, can you briefly describe these two worlds to our listeners, Tohu and Tikkun?
Yeah. So Tohu and Tikkun are two spiritual worlds, and Tohu preceded Tikkun. So just to say it in very simple terms, Tohu was a world where it overwhelmed itself. It couldn't allow itself to function properly because of how it was structured. The structure of Tohu was as follows. In every world, all spirituality and all of godly light, there's always two aspects. There's the fact that godly light is shining, and then there's what the godly light is focused on to allow the godly light to become revealed and manifest into something, to reveal this energy in a specific place. So every world has these two dimensions, light and vessel.
And that the vessel is like frozen light. So it's like the ice is made of water, but it can be shaped into a vessel, and then water, it can hold water, but it's all water.
Right. Well said. And that's very true, because that's very important to know, because the vessel is not something secondary to the light. They both interact together in a very harmonious way. Now, the issue with Tohu And as you know, if you learn a little bit of Kabbalah, Tohu breaks, and it's called the breaking of the vessels. And there's like a massive explosion happening. The reason why this happens is because Tohu can't see itself really being manifest into the vessels. The light is just, it wants to remain in its complete and awesome, very powerful state, and doesn't want to lower itself down to become part of the vessel. So therefore, it's this buildup of immense, almost like selfish energy, which wants to be contained within itself, and doesn't allow anything around it or anyone else to experience what it's really feeling. And that doesn't leave room for much else. So when this light just comes into the world of Tohu, the world can't function. There's no room for anything. So you have all this energy, nowhere to put it. It's just going to break everything. And that's what happened. Tohu completely shattered. Actually, if you learn into the actual what exactly happened, you'll see that only 7.5 of the vessels actually broke. Two, the top three vessels or two vessels actually stayed intact. And the lowest vessel, which was Malchut, it actually only broke halfway. There's reasons for that, but that's not really so important. And eventually, this light shattering gave birth to this concept of tikkun, of repair. Because by the shattering of the vessels, tikkun, the lower world of Atzilus, was created to make up for what Tohu was lacking, which was the ability to find harmony. And that allowed Tikkun Olam to take place in this world of Atzilut. In that's why Atzilut is called Tikkun, the world of emanation, because in this world, we can allow this bridge of the vessel and the light to come together, because the light doesn't just see itself as some energy that wants to remain that powerful and self-centered, very passionate and overpowering identity.
It doesn't want to be contained in a vessel.
Right. And that's because the light sees value in tikkun to come down and become a part of the lower thing. It sees that there's purpose in transcending itself and not allowing itself to be so caught up in how much energy it has for itself to keep, but to allow something else to enter and share its power and energy with the things around it. And that's what's so beautiful. We're a little bit of that tikkun in our day-to-day lives. We can share and transcend the part of ourselves that would really like to just stay in ourselves and be comfortable and just not allow room for anyone else. God has created us in the image of tikkun, where we can incorporate plurality. And things that are, so to say, initially separate, doesn't not want to come together and bring them into a unity, into a oneness.
Yeah, that's just so beautiful. So let me go over a few things that you said. Tohu preceded tikkun. So, you know, in the Torah, it says, you know, the world was void. So that idea of voidness, of emptiness before creation. Since there's really no time and place, so everything that happened in the past is happening now. So that world of Tohu still exists. And it appears in our lives like Esau in the Torah was full of Tohu, self-serving, very free-spirited, and he really exercised his own free will, but to the detriment of the life Esau could have had as part of the covenant. So he went into a separate path because he was so filled with his own physicality and power as a separate entity, a separate being, an experience of separateness on the earth. So therefore, he wasn't included in the lineage of the covenant.
Right. And we'll set the record straight. Being a Tohu person is not evil, because it's more like an idealism. You're very focused on a very specific reason, a goal, and that overtakes you. You don't allow anything else to come into your life, which therefore just that's not a healthy way to function. But your ideals aren't necessarily bad. You're just too caught up in them, and that's not healthy. So Esau, I mean, if you look in the Torah, seemingly you could say Esau was evil. Right? He didn't do very nice things. But in the spiritual Esau, which is how we could look at ourselves and sort of say, try to focus more on the tikkun side of ourselves and repair ourselves, we also get caught up in this, in certain things that we feel very passionate about. And that doesn't leave us much room for anything else. And our job is to be like Yaakov, which whose job is to try to refine Esau, the Esau within us, and use that power, but put it into vessels, be broad and expansive, and allow this energy to be contained in something specific. And that will, when you're channeling it in the right way, it doesn't just think about its own energy, but it can overflows into everything and becomes harmonious within the person.
Harmony. This brings us to the two paths of awakening, which is self-realization and self-transcendence. Can you speak about what these two different states of consciousness mean and perhaps how they relate to tohu and tikkun?
So self-realization and self-transcendence are a good way of naming and describing what the spiritual counterparts are in tohu and tikkun. And self-realization, which is the tohu of a person, is sort of say a person knows how much he can perform and what he can produce and how much energy and passion he has, and therefore he wants to just take everything over with that passion. And the part of himself that has that in him just completely emerges, and that all that power and energy overwhelms everything outside of that. And the opposite, which is the healthier way, is self-transcendence, which is actually bringing a higher level of energy than tohu itself into your life, which that allows the transcendence in the first place. So when we act like tikkun, when we act in this transcendent self, we're not going away from the immense passion and energy that we have when we have self-realization, when we do see ourselves in the picture. We're just channeling that to be used for something that's beyond ourselves, not to be caught up where it's coming from, meaning ourselves, but to be more focused on how it can be used to affect a harmony and a oneness in everything around us, which kind of eliminates that the yourself, because in a very, very self-isolated way, that's not really so important, because if it's really about how much passion I have, then to bring that into everything else around me is not really my goal. And that's where the tikkun, the repair, comes in.
Well, I think that we all experience this in life. Well, let's externalize it for a moment. We can think of people who are really into self-realization. So maybe they're a CEO of a business, or they're a fantastic musician, but that's all they think about. And along the way, there's casualties. So their relationships might suffer. Some marriages break apart because the focus is too much on themselves. But on the other hand, if we come to Earth and we don't develop ourselves, we don't develop our leadership skills, our musical skills, if we're a musician, if we don't develop ourselves, then we're really not living life fully. The two have to go hand in hand, where we do develop our skills. If we're a gardener, to be an excellent gardener, to be in tune as a gardener, at the same time to realize that you don't just do this for yourself, you do this because you're producing food and you're refining the earth, etc.
Right. So that's actually what it says in Kabbalah, that when we work and make the world a part of the transcendence that we're striving for, the light that originally broke the vessels of tohu actually become part of tikkun. So when we focus on the things around us and how everything should be harmonious and one, we're actually allowing ourselves not to run away from ourselves, but we're channeling the passion, but we're putting it somewhere where it can stay safe and be helpful. And that's what's so beautiful about how this whole thing works. By learning Kabbalah, and this is kind of what we get back to when we spoke about Hasidism and Kabbalah, when we learn about ourselves and we learn about the world and its spiritual counterparts and how existence is really truly made up, and we learn about ourselves and the passion we have within ourselves, we can learn to channel that and make the tikkun a more beautiful tikkun, which didn't exist until this moment, because we worked on ourselves and we looked at the world and ourselves as a place that can be better and be more beautiful.
Well, let's talk a little more about the tzaddik and doing teshuva. So serving a tzaddik and serving by doing teshuva. So can anyone have some elements of the tzaddik, or does this really reserve for the rare few? It seems to me, I can understand teshuva. If I go and plant trees, I'm in a sense doing teshuva. If I light my Shabbos candles, I'm doing teshuva. If I'm kind to someone, it's doing teshuva. But where does the tzaddik come into play here?
Everyone has a little bit of a tzaddik inside of them, because we all do things that we see ourselves as a very whole person, as someone who we're not trying to repair something, because no one's so evil to the extent that nothing about themselves is right. And I think in a certain sense, that's really the tzaddik within every single person. And that's very helpful, because people have to feel that they're somewhat on course. Complete, not really seeing any harmony and only creating the harmony would just be very, very depressing and very disheartening. So everyone has a tzaddik inside of them, the part of themselves that feels it's right and feels what's right and feels part of what it means to be a good person and what it means to be someone who does the right thing. But we can't always rely on that. And that's why we have to have Tikkun Olam, because we're obviously going to fall at some point. We're not perfect. And that's where we have this balance of being sometimes like the tzaddik and sometimes like the person who does teshuva, always repairing ourselves. And we're almost like getting back to that point of a tzaddik when we do the teshuva.
Oh, that's lovely. We're a whole person. Both takes place inside us.
Right, yeah. And not only that, but when we do teshuva, we actually go beyond the tzaddik, because we've used the darkness and the evil, and we've transformed that into good by doing teshuva, by returning and repairing what we've undone. We're using the energy of tikkun. We're using this immense power, which cannot initially be contained. We're channeling that through the teshuva, and it catapults us way beyond where a tzaddik can even imagine himself to be.
Tell me if I'm right, because you know I'm just learning all this to look at the Torah stories that I grew up with from a more Kabbalistic point of view. So Joseph was a tzaddik, and he became the head of his family and of all of Egypt except for the Pharaoh. So he, in a sense, embodied a kingship. He rose very high in power. But his lineage didn't, in the end, maintain that power. It shifted into the hands of Leah, what represents Teshuvah. Whereas Esav could have married Leah, and that would have been that whole lineage. But since Esav didn't rise to the potential, Jacob took on both roles, but in the end, Leah, the lineage of Teshuvah, representing Teshuvah, became more dominant, became the king in Moses, the deliverer. It's in the story, and it's in our history. Although tzaddik may start something, it's completed through Teshuvah.
Right. Well, very well said. Very, very, very true point. This is kind of like the whole interplay when Judah comes down to save his brother, who's imprisoned by Joseph in the later portions, after the whole drama is in the middle of unfolding. The Kabbalah focuses on how Judah and Joseph were these opposite points, because Judah is coming forth to Joseph, and Judah represents something deeper than Joseph. He can move past the obstacles that Joseph is setting forth, and which we see later on, which is why Judah's lineage is what is the one that eventually takes on the dynasty of kingship in the Jewish people. Because like you were saying, it's the teshuvah. That is what goes beyond the tohu, returning and repairing and making it right. We start out as a tzaddik because the starting point has to be whole, or else the whole foundation would fall apart. But what it all leads to is to go beyond that point, a perfect world, which was created using the teshuva and using repair. And that's more powerful than just having a starting point, which is inherently good.
That makes the point beautifully. You know, it's fascinating. I'm writing blog posts every week on the Parsha, and I'm learning as I go, but I'm writing from a Kabbalistic perspective as much as I'm able. I'm learning from you and your father and a few other sources. And it's a completely different reading of Torah than what we're taught in Sunday school, Hebrew school, as children.
Yes, definitely. I mean, it's quite beautiful to actually see it from the inner workings of the Torah. It's something that people would actually want more of if they just studied it a bit more. I mean, it's just so beautiful. The other beauty of it as not just seeing the inner workings, but as you mentioned before, there's when we learn what Torah is really trying to say, so to speak, we can see a greater picture throughout all of Torah, a unity, a singularity, which all points to one point. And that's one of the other beautiful parts about Kabbalah and Hasidism in particular, because they focus on bridging everything together, showing a common thread. And this is what Hasidus is very good at. Hasidus shows how everything points back to the Almighty. It all points back to the place where it's all one and there is no division. And it all works perfectly in harmony together. And when we learn the Torah with this beautiful insight of Kabbalah and Hasidus, we see that in the Torah, and then we can therefore translate that into our lives and become this tikkun, this repair person. We can become the teshuva by repairing the world and ourselves and making the oneness in everything around us.
You know, it's really true what you're saying, because we can look at our lives from the level of story. You know, she said this, he said that, I did this. You know, there's a story to everything in our lives. But that doesn't get at the underlying meaning or the causes or the intentions and the larger purpose. And so we can focus on the story, or we could focus on the unity, the meaning and depth in our own lives, just as we can in Torah. I think it's a complete parallel to what everyone experiences day to day.
Right. Yeah, for sure. And we are like the little Torah, you know. We have to see ourselves like the teachings that the Torah is telling us, and we can work towards that goal, towards that more wholesome self experience in ourselves by almost like becoming the Torah.
Wasn't there a story about Rabbi Akiva who he was challenged to explain the Torah while standing on one foot?
Right.
Can you tell that story?
This you're referring to a story in the Talmud where a heretic went to a few sages, and he was trying to make fun of the Torah. So he's like, "Yo, Rabbi, tell me what the whole all of Torah on one foot," which basically means like, try to like tell me one thing I can encapsulate and include everything about the Torah. And they all chased him away. They're like, "You're just making a fool out of yourselves in the Torah. Like, this is not how you learn everything. This is not how we learn. This is not how Torah is taught." And finally, he came to Rabbi Akiva, and Rabbi Akiva told him, "You know, there is one thing that encapsulates everything in the Torah, which is to love your fellow Jew as yourself. You love your fellow human being as yourself, and the rest is just commentary." That ties into this whole experience of spirituality and Kabbalah, the inner meaning of everything, because why does that encapsulate all the Torah? And Chassidus explains, which is based on Kabbalah, that when we look at our fellow, like ourselves, which is only possible on the level of soul, in the spiritual level, where things are more straightforward and everything is much more unified and part of a greater and bigger picture, then we are actually one. And when we do that to the world, that is how the Almighty looks at the world and sees the good in the world. And therefore, that's what brought the whole world to become created in the first place, for God to see the harmony in the world. So we're using out everything that Torah wants us to learn when we see the harmony and the oneness within humanity as a whole. And that's why it's so beautiful.
So how do we see tohu and tikkun in our lives?
So for more of a mechanical level of how the spirituality works in general, well, let's focus on the worlds themselves of tohu and tikkun, and like break them down piece by piece. Every spiritual world or every godly world has two aspects. We spoke before about light and vessel. And there's a little bit of a paradox, which is interesting, about tohu versus tikkun. And that is as follows. Light, in general, its purpose is to just forget about where it's going and just try to be reabsorbed back into where it came from. Because light means that there's a source, there's something that's above me that I'm coming from. So the nature of light is just to completely revert back and into itself and almost like disappear. Vessels, on the other hand, are the exact opposite. The vessels want the revelation to become, to come out and sort of say, become separated from the source of the light, so the light could shine into something separate, into something different, and illuminate the darkness around itself.
Would you say that's duality? That the vessel is the presence of duality?
Yeah, yes, yes. The vessel sees itself, and therefore sees itself as independent. Mm. So it wants the light to come into itself so it could function as part of everything, because it's lacking something. It's like floating in an abyss where it can't see anything else around it.
I think we all experience that by living. All these things to try to find fulfillment, and it's still the next day is like, what now? It's like I'm never fulfilled.
Right, it's like an emptiness. Like you're just floating around and you're not really focused on something that's full of light and energy. Just the vessel itself is just dark and cold, so to speak. And the vessel really wants to be reunited with the light, to shine and to be vibrant and full of love and light and warmth. And as we were saying before, but the light doesn't really want that. The light's like, well, I know it's your cool guy down there. You're down there. And I want to just be up here. Like, don't make me go too far. I want to, it's much warmer where the source is and how much the amount of warmth you're going to find in the vessel. So in Tohu, this interplay is taking place. The light is shining from the Almighty. He wants to create a world full of light. And the vessel is like ready to accept the light. But the light's like saying, you know what? It's too dark down there. I won't be able to feel the impact of my source, who I really want to be around. And
doesn't want to separate.
Hang out with, exactly.
Ever since the reed has been cut from its bed, it wails, a sorrowful sound. In order to have a flute, you have to cut the reed and put holes in it and blow through it. And it has a mournful sound because it just wants to be reunited with the reed bed.
Right, right, exactly. And that's like, it's like our soul, you know, our soul wants to cleave back to the Almighty because it feels like it's not meant to be here. It's much warmer, much more comfortable where it came from. Like, that's why humans all, like, we go back to our mothers, like, when we have, like, as kids, they embrace their mothers, like, they want to hang around their mothers because they feel comfortable and a sense of at-homeness when they're around where you come from. So the light wants to do that, and the vessel wants to stop thinking about itself so much, where it came from, and become part of this, the separateness, to make it reunited. Because the vessels are also, they're inherently godly, and inherently good, just they don't see that in themselves yet. The light still wants to, as its natural inclination, revert back to its source. It still feels more comfortable, but it recognizes that by investing itself into something separate and cold and dark, by lighting up something else around it, it actually helps itself. It actually makes itself reach a higher point than even before the light was emanated in the first place. And that's the same as true with us, which is why we are all striving towards tikkun as opposed to tohu. Even though we all have the immense energy, when we come to someone else and allow other people into our lives, help another person, and sort of say transcend ourselves, we actually reach a place higher than we could have ever imagined just staying with the passion within ourselves. So much more is changed and repaired, and so much more good comes out of this transcendence of
by participating in the world.
Yes, and people around you, and that's what's so beautiful about tikkun, which is why it's so important. It doesn't just leave yourself behind, but you're actually becoming a more fulfilled person when you're interacting with things that are not just yourself.
Talk to me a little bit about ruach. Ruach is soul and its breath. And so how does that fit into the tohu tikkun worlds?
Ruach, which is breath, this is like the spirit of a person. In the person, there's two elements of tohu and tikkun. which exist, the breath of life that fills us, we're seeing the harmony between the light and the vessel, because we have parts of ourselves that are more light and more vessel, and they work together. So the ruach inside of ourselves is the experience that we find by being alive. That is this fusion of the light and the vessel coming together as one.
So what is the role of ego in all of this?
At the end of the day, ego is something that we want to limit, because as you get caught up in yourself, you're always going to not want to share your energy with other people. But at the same time, everyone has a part and everyone has a specific way which they could share themselves, their ego, so to speak, with the world. And therefore, we have to look at ego not really from a self-absorbed perspective, but more from when you could share your ego. Your ego doesn't have to be a bad thing. Your ego could just be a way to share the beauty of yourself with people around you. So we're not asking anyone to just completely stop thinking about themselves. That's very healthy in a certain sense. We have to recognize how to channel that ego into the vessel, into the place where it's part of the harmony.
So in Sufism, we speak of ego as nafs, and nafs means breath. So we talk about refining the breath, refining the ego, so that it no longer is focused on self-gratification, rather considers the other and ourselves as one. So by refining your breath, refining your ego, your sense of self to something boundaryless, you can encompass all. Does that make sense to you as a Kabbalist?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, that's a very beautiful way of saying it.
Good, thank you. You say there's a difference between being spiritual and being godly. From your point of view, what is the difference between being spiritual and being godly?
Spirituality is everything that's not physical, but there's nothing holy, so to speak, about spirituality. Spirituality just tells me what's beyond the world, what's beyond the physical. And it obviously gives it's a depth that you can't see from the exterior of a physical world. But to live in that space could also, so to say, be a little bit egotistical. You could self-realize yourself in a spiritual way. You're not transcending yourself in the ultimate way, because you're just exchanging what it means to be yourself. Putting it in a spiritual way. The way Tikkun really transcends itself is recognizing that there's something beyond itself that needs it to be part of something else around it, which is the Almighty. So that's where the Torah comes in and tells us this. The Torah's way of spirituality is to infuse the message of the Torah, of doing good for the Almighty, into the things we do. And that's the first step in the transcendence, which allows all the other parts of spirituality to become holy and become imbued with this sense of real purpose. So it's important to remember what this spirituality is trying to lead us to. And that's the difference between someone who's just spiritual versus someone who's godly. A person who's godly can see spirituality as just an extension of God's desire to make the world a place where he feels comfortable, a place of spirituality, of meaning and purpose. Someone who's just inherently spiritual just sees the world on a deeper level, doesn't realize what the real purpose of getting there is.
Would you say the purpose is unity toward the one, toward oneness?
Yes, definitely. And we can definitely do that by doing good. Because by doing something for the Almighty, we show in the world that there is purpose, that there is meaning. And that's the essence of spirituality. Show something beyond the physical.
Well, that's a beautiful thought to end on. Well, thank you so much, Rabbi Mendel. I wish you all the very best. You're just starting your career and you're deepening your studies, and you're such a lovely man. And I'm so glad to know you. I'm glad to know your father. So great. Thank you very much. Blessings to you.
Thank you for having me on your podcast. It was really a pleasure.
For more mind-heart awakenings like these, you can follow us on this podcast and on our blog at Kabbalah 99. That's where we discuss the weekly Torah portion through the lens of today's challenges and offer practices to stay sane, grounded, and connected. If you like this episode, please remember to tell one friend about it. Next week, we'll hear from another thought leader who will help us to explore our experience of life and our place in this universe of wonder. Thanks for listening. I'm Deborah Sophia. See you next week.